Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner is on the control board. And it's, as usual, open forum. You can call at 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. I don't know that I like saying it that way, but let's try something different. Oh man, it's just hard to find news that doesn't depress me. But let's work on it. All right, starting kind of slow. I heard someone, I don't remember what I was watching, but someone made an excellent point. You know, on a lot of, in a lot of science fiction or fantasy particularly, they make up languages for aliens. So like in the sci-fi series The Expanse, they have a language that's kind of evolved as a mixture of Earth languages and Mars dialects, and they kind of do their own thing. So they make up languages, and there are obsessive fans who actually learn the language. Same is true for Klingon. It's just a typical thing. They had a show, Defiance, where they had several different alien languages that they had to make up, and they were very proud of the effort they made getting linguists to kind of make it up. Game of Thrones, same thing. And someone made the point, and I think it's an excellent point, there are so many interesting non-standard, and when I say standard, I mean based on either Chinese, ancient Chinese, or Proto-Indo-European. So many languages that are obscure and endangered and interesting in and of themselves. Native American languages, Asian dialects, Pacific Islander dialects. Wouldn't it be interesting to just use those as your alien or fake languages? There was once a movie. It was called Battle Beyond the Stars. And what fascinated me is that all of the lettering on the screens, it was all Hebrew. It was a Corman, a Roger Corman film. So, I mean, I think it was like sort of an inside joke. Jewish producer, all the writing was in Hebrew. In Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the Vogon writing, apparently that was Pittman shorthand. So you get these interesting things. And then you have movies like Wind Talkers, where they used Navajo as essentially a code language because it was so unlike anything else that it was effectively an unbreakable verbal code. And they had Navajo speakers at both ends of the radio. And that was in the Pacific, how they sometimes exchanged secret information. And it just seems to me like a really good idea to essentially get these dying languages and put them on film or in books so that we have sort of an updated preservation of them. But anyhow, so that's just a thing. I ran across that. I touched last week on the groundwater situation, how over the next 35 to 75 years, a lot of the world's groundwater is going to become inaccessible because the aquifers are being drained so quickly. And I mean, that won't leave us with just desert, but it will affect, the estimate is, up to 6% of the world's food supply. And, you know, one of the things that I've wondered for years is why in this country we can't build a national flood control system. At any given time, it seems like we have floods in one part of the country and we have droughts in another part of the country. And the floods cause billions of dollars in damage and suffering, and the droughts cause billions of dollars in damage and suffering. And I keep thinking to myself, if we could take water when we need to from one place and move it to another place that's desperate for it and avoid floods and destruction and misery, in the long run, in terms of saved gross domestic product, in terms of saved structures, in terms of saved food supplies, et cetera, not to mention human misery, wouldn't this be a worthwhile thing to do? It would be a large infrastructure project. It would ultimately have financial, economic benefit as well as human benefit. Just saying. Okay, and now I'm going to touch on another thing. I know I've got a couple of calls. I'm not going to let you hang too long. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. I've been reading some articles recently. There was a really, really thoughtful piece by the Reverend William Barber of North Carolina called "We Are Witnessing the Birth Pangs of a Third Reconstruction." And then, of course, all the Republican stuff where they're claiming a mandate. Yeah, their mandate with a lost popular vote. And it got me thinking, oddly, of Franklin Roosevelt's Four Freedoms speech. In 1941, January 6, 1941, Franklin Roosevelt gave a State of the Union speech that came to be known as the Four Freedoms speech. And the upshot was he was talking about the world falling into war, wars going on in Asia, wars threatening in, or actually going on at that time, 1941, in Europe. And he talked about how the United States should be involved in trying to ensure that everybody in the world could rely on four freedoms: freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And it occurred to me that we have come so far from Franklin Roosevelt that those four freedoms are threatened here. Freedom of speech is threatened here. Freedom of worship is threatened here. Freedom from want? Poverty is increasing. Wages are not keeping up. Freedom from want? We need that here. And freedom from fear? Scares the heck out of me. Anyway, I do recommend, you know, I always tell people that I have a lot of notes and links that I actually put pretty much in toto on my website, thinkwingradio.com, so you can link to articles that I'm looking at, articles that I may or may not have time to refer to, articles, for example, links to the Four Freedoms, links to the Reverend's speech or article, I should say, a lot of interesting stuff, thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at thinkwingradio. And I'll just mention, as long as I'm doing my shameless self-promotion, KPFT. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, contributing however much or little you can. It's tax-deductible if you itemize, but the main thing is you're donating to a worthy cause. KPFT, community radio, mostly staffed by volunteers. Okay, I think I've made the callers wait long enough, so let's start with Jerry. You're on the air, as always. Thanks for calling. How you doing tonight?
All right, how you doing?
Okay, so what are you thinking tonight?
Well, you just said what I said, something similar to what I mentioned last week and everything. The Republicans don't have a mandate.
No.
And that's, you know, basically, you know, if you're a Republican and you tell me you got a mandate, I'm going to call you a liar to your face.
Right.
And everything. And, I mean, I won't hesitate. You know, basically, if you go out and ask, you know, you go out and ask a half, you know, you go out and ask like five different Trump supporters, people who voted for Trump, you know, well, what's the number one issue? You're going to get four or five different answers.
You know, all the Trump voters, I have listened to a lot of arguments and analyses and evaluations, and the only thing that has struck with me is, at the end of the day, there are really only two kinds of Trump voters. The Trump voters who voted for him because he's a racist and a misogynist, and the voters who voted for him where that wasn't a deal breaker.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, to me, oh, and let's not even talk about the authoritarian tendencies and stuff, but at the end of the day,
oh, yeah,
there are the people that voted for the things that he very obviously stands for, and there are the people for whom they were not deal breakers, who essentially passive-aggressively endorse the things that he said he's for, which are horrible.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not good. And I feel like the clock is ticking down to like an execution date, which I have never in my life felt before for any inauguration, regardless of president, regardless of party. I mean, The feeling is literally indescribable. And I have a pretty good vocabulary, and the feeling is literally indescribable.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I have relatives. I have my sister feels that way, but, you know, I was very concerned about that. But I don't know. I'm concerned, but I think that, you know, I think that they're going to, you know, it seems to me like he's going to, you know, he's going to have to make up his mind about a number of things quickly. And I think it's going to be hard for him to do, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to get in together with some of the Republicans if he does some of the things he's, you know, a couple of things he wants to do make a certain amount of sense.
Like?
Two or three things he proposed actually, you know, could halfway work.
Like?
But the problem is it flies in the face, in essence, and especially to do it in the kind of, you know, to do it spending the kind of money or
what
doing
couple of things are you even talking about? Enlighten me.
Well, he had that big infrastructure, you know, him and Hillary both had said that they would like to build up more infrastructure.
Yeah, but the way
big infrastructure project.
But you know that his infrastructure plan is basically tax cuts to infrastructure builders to give them incentives to build infrastructure, which of course is ridiculous.
Well, that's not a surprise, but anyway.
Okay, and what's the other thing? Now that we've shot that one down, what's the other one?
The other one was, you know, in essence, the idea is to basically target a rate of growth instead of, like, you know, an inflationary, you know, instead of, like, sitting there saying, you know, instead of 2% inflation, we might go with, like, 2.5% inflation. You know, we might tolerate, like, that much or 3% and everything.
Were you sort of adultish in the 1970s?
No.
I was. And I have to tell you, when you start talking about more than 2%, more than 3%, it becomes a slippery slope. At one point, we had 17% interest rates.
Yeah, I remember.
And we had like 10% inflation.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we did annually, and that's why Volcker basically choked everybody, like I said one time on your show before, here some time ago. You know, Volcker got on and choked it. And that was necessary. But it was
really painful. And it was mostly related to the oil price shock of 1973. I mean, we were going through a little bit of a stagflation period before that, but that's what really sparked the inflationary spiral, because basically the price of oil quadrupled overnight. So that was the start. But
yeah,
in any case,
quite a bit.
Now, one thing I will say, I am not against international trade, but I am for fair trade versus free trade. And I have not seen, you know, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, supporters argue that that's the closest to a fair trade deal that perhaps we have ever negotiated. I don't know the details, so I'm not sure, but some of the other things I've heard make me question. But, you know, at the end of the day, and I think you will agree with this, we're not talking about whether Trump is pro-trade or anti-trade. We're not talking about whether he's pro-tax cuts or pro-infrastructure or whatever. We're talking about, can this guy be trusted with the mechanisms and capabilities of the United States government? And, you know, as far as his learning and making decisions, I don't think he has any decisions to make. His decision is, I'm going to do whatever works for me. That's his decision. Whatever works for him is what he's going to decide. And you'll have people like Pence who might try to guide him into some more conventional policies, like pro-NATO, for example, and anti-Russian aggression, for example. But I think that he'll do what aggrandizes him and his family. It's going to be a kleptocracy.
I think that I certainly do agree to that, with that to a large extent, and everything, but that's not going to, it's going to become very obvious if he starts doing that, and a whole bunch of people who voted for him and a bunch of Republicans will start peeling off quickly.
But borrowing an impeachment or something else, we would be stuck with that for 4 years minimum. Jerry, I'm going to let you wrap up because I need to go on to some of the next callers. You want to finish up any thoughts?
Yeah, I would just like to say that, you know, they've talked about having one of the reasons why a lot of economists think that the growth rate isn't as good as it used to be. Part of that is because of the inflation thing, and there's a whole bunch of economists. Krugman's come out saying, you know, we should let inflation run a little higher, and so has actually Robert Poland wrote a book called Contours of Dissent, and like close to 20 years ago now, in which he argued that we should try that. They don't know what happens at certain, you know, basically in that, you know, basically it's like you and I said, inflation was running nearly 5% under Reagan during the boom years.
It was running at 10% under Carter because he was inheriting the oil shock.
Well, and then, of course, they had the problems with Reagan because, like I said, Reagan and Carter and Reagan, Volcker was controlling that. The question is, and this is going to become something that's going to come up very quickly, is just exactly where do all these different groups stand in relation to each other? Because the Congress can pass stuff to restrict the powers, basically, of the Federal Reserve and all that. But it's going to be very interesting to see how that little dance plays out.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll go ahead and let you go.
I appreciate that. Thanks for calling, as always. And you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. We are a 501c3 organization. You are now working on 2017 taxes if you make a deduction, but it is always good to support KPFT at kpft.org. Click on the tip jar or the donate link or whatever they have going on there now. Hopefully you'll pick our show, Think Wing Radio. ThinkWingRadio.com is my website where you can refer to all the stuff I talk about and a lot of stuff I never get to. At Think Wing Radio is where you can follow me on Twitter. And next up is Scott. Scott, how are you doing?
Fine. Yes, President Obama was not at all divisive.
Well, I think he was divisive in the sense that just being who he is divided him from a lot of people.
Oh.
The color of his skin made him divisive, nothing he did particularly.
Well, there's a right-wing propaganda machine.
Yes.
And I just got a new book about called The Fox Effect about Fox News by David Brock and a co-author. And, well, Fox News really got into action under Obama.
They have been highly destructive to the country ever since their formation.
But if it had been Hillary Clinton or anybody else, they would have found a way to they would oppose a Democratic president no matter what.
Absolutely.
They'd find some excuse. They certainly drove the Republican Party to pursue a strategy of relentless opposition to Obama. And I don't know that race was all that big a part of it.
Well, I think for some people it absolutely was, but I think in a lot of cases it was just an excuse that they could use, sort of hidden under all the other business that allowed them to attack him relentlessly.
Well, yeah, but I do think the Fox News and other right-wing machinery was feeling their Wheaties, and they would oppose any Democratic president and much the same way.
Well, 35 years of character assassination against the Clintons, I think it speaks for itself.
Hillary's been a target for a long time.
There are people in their 50s who literally have heard nothing else their entire lives except this constant meme of you can't trust her, you can't trust her, you can't trust her. Yeah. And they can't even tell you why they can't trust her. They just know after hearing about it for 35 years, which is basically their entire adult lives, they can't trust her.
Yeah.
It's insane, and it's sad, and you know, I think it's not going to happen anytime soon, but we really do need to break up the media conglomerates that have formed over the last 20, 30 years.
You mean through antitrust laws?
Canceling the Murdoch exception that allows so much ownership of so many media outlets in one market.
Okay.
Equal time. I mean, really, we need to get back to more local ownership, more diversity of opinions, and stop this speaking nationally from a corporate entity in one voice.
Well, I think it's going to have take a change in the voting public too. There, in fact, I think that's going to happen. That will have to happen first, unless before you can get any expect much more from government.
Yeah, we'll have to get a trust busting president, which of course requires an electorate that would elect a trust busting president.
Yeah. Yeah, it, I haven't heard a lot about trust. I haven't heard a lot about antitrust in the last 10 years, and
I don't think that it would be strictly speaking an antitrust issue. I think it's more of a national security issue. I think you'd have a problem making an antitrust argument because there are enough large media conglomerates that you can't say they're not competing. And there are enough second- and third-tier media outlets that it would be hard to say they're suppressing competition. But I do think you could make an excellent case that it's a national security issue.
Well, yeah, okay. Now, there are lesser media. There's certainly KPFT. There's Daily Coast. But they don't seem to rake up enough votes to win many elections.
Well, I mean, there are smaller newspapers, there are locally owned radio and TV stations. But, you know, one of the things that I comment when we're doing fundraising, there are approximately 200 AM and FM stations in Houston, and about half of them are owned by five companies, and that used to be illegal.
Oh, okay. Like, what's that conglomerate called?
Well, you've got CBS owns about half a dozen stations. You've got iHeartRadio that used to be Clear Channel.
Okay.
And they own about half a dozen stations. And I mean, if you can actually go to the Texas government, and they have a list of who owns what radio stations in various markets.
You mean Clear Channel changed its name?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, they became iHeartRadio.
I see.
And they renamed their billboard division and a few other things. All right, I have several other callers, so I'm trying to move along a little quicker. So if you want to wrap anything up, I'll let you have the last word and move on.
Well, thank you. And, can't really think of anything else.
All right, well, you can always call back.
Yes.
And if we have time, I can let you on again.
Yeah.
All right, take care, Scott. Thanks for calling. Okay, Think Wing Radio with Mike Kona, KPFT 90.1, open line 713-526-5738. Earl, you're on. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. On the groundwater issue,
yes.
Things are happening in Texas.
Tell me.
Things are definitely happening.
Well, I know we are now working mostly on surface water around
Houston. They have a plan. This legislature placed a plan to phase in the use of surface water.
Right.
Which is very difficult, which is very expensive to treat, but they say there's no alternative because of the subsidence.
Exactly. It wasn't a matter of draining the aquifers. It was a matter of flooding the city.
Yeah. In fact, 30 years ago, I had to register my residential water well with Fort Bend County because now, even back then, they began beginning scared. They said, we got to figure out how much water we're using. But we had a scandal in Fort Bend County about groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
All of the cities in Fort Bend County were being good boys. They were investing in water treatment plants to cut down on the use of groundwater. We've got the subsidence district.
Yes.
And the subsidence district, unfortunately, have a loophole. They said you can take water from other counties. And Richmond and Rosenberg were not going to be good boys. They decided they would drill deep wells in Austin and Waller County, all of the counties, and truck the water to Richland Rosenberg.
Truck it?
Yeah, I'm not joking. This was a big scandal. But the
they were observing the letter. They were observing the letter of the law by not pumping groundwater in Fort Bend.
This would be moved to other counties.
Well, that's nice to just ship it out.
Yeah, and Austin and Waller counties were not happy to say, "What are we going to do with for water?"
Right,
and especially Katy. Anyway, the subsidence district issued a ruling. They said that it would simply be moving the subsidence. It would not be eliminating it, and therefore they would not allow it.
Right.
And because this would open up a can of worms, Houston could simply come into Fort Bend County and take our water.
Sure.
And it's a domino effect. But it was amazing that they just thought they could make it fly. No way they could make it fly.
I want to throw out a thing about groundwater that is talked about very, very little, but it's a real thing. Now, let me just qualify this by saying I have been given to understand that if you go deep enough into an aquifer, the water is relatively soft in terms of minerals. But a lot of the groundwater that is used in agriculture, particularly out in the West, is mineral-laden. Even if it's not technically hard water, it is mineral-laden. And by pumping groundwater, what you end up doing is depositing these minerals in the soil.
Yeah.
And there are areas of what used to be agriculture where the salt level has risen to the root level in those areas, and they would literally need to be decontaminated of salt before they could be used for agriculture again. So using groundwater is not an unadulterated benefit. It has its drawbacks, yeah. And it, in a sense, you're poisoning the land. If you have ever driven in a subdivision with brick facade houses and you notice like the bottom 4, 5, 6 layers of brick are all white with mineral buildup, yeah. Or if you have looked and seen the curved sweep of white mineral on fences from yard irrigation, there is a lot of minerals in water that don't necessarily make it hard, but the water is not distilled. And it deposits in the soil, it deposits on other surfaces, and eventually it will contaminate agricultural land.
Yeah, this has been a big problem with ancient civilizations. They've noticed that they had to change the acreage they were using for their crops because of the contamination.
And it takes a lot of water to refresh that soil once it has become that contaminated.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to flush it out. Yeah, my water well is only 68 feet deep. It's very hard water.
Exactly. If you get down to a real aquifer, I think that the water can actually be somewhat softer, but that doesn't make it distilled.
Yeah, that's what the well driller said. We could go deeper, but we would have to go really deep. And, you know, it's basically good enough for what you're going to be needing. Unfortunately, it's very hard.
Right.
But, yeah, we are doing something about the groundwater, fortunately. I think Texas, once the subsidence started happening, they said, wait a minute, this is serious. And, you know, for the Texas legislature to actually get involved in something like this, it must have been really a real heart stopper. But, yeah, we are doing something. It's just that some people are just not getting with the program.
Well, you know, you've always got the people that figure, as long as it works for me, by the time I die, who's going to care?
Yeah. Yeah, even though it was totally wackadoo, we were totally Rube Goldberg, you know. And then, of course, they said, what about the people in the other counties? Are they going to sit still for this? I don't think so. You know, you would have to get permission to drill the deep wells, and I don't think they were going to get permission.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you're taking water from someplace else that someplace else
exactly.
needs.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like you said, moving water from one place. And there was that plan way back when, the 60s. We would dig a canal from Mississippi all the way to West Texas, and there was a referendum in Texas. I think it only failed by 6,000 votes.
And of course, the people that are getting served by the Mississippi might have had something to say about that.
But I do think
it goes back to my notion of a national flood control system where you can take water from areas that are threatening to flood and move it to areas that need it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of difficult.
Well, you have areas where the water would run downhill and pool and store, and then you would have areas where you'd have to pump it uphill. But the point is taking it from areas where it could do millions or billions of dollars worth of damage and moving it to areas where the drought is doing millions or billions of dollars worth of damage. And it would be surface water, which is, you know, basically a good thing. Anyway.
By the way, before I go, could you explain what Think Wing Radio really means? I've never heard you explain it.
I have a couple of times, but I can understand. When I first started doing radio back in 2010, and I had to think of what to call the show, and, you know, I actually came up with the Mike Koenig Show, and the producer at that station said, no, you really want to come up with something a little different. So I began thinking, you know, you've got right-wing radio and left-wing politics. There isn't really much left-wing radio. And I said, well, left-wing, right-wing, but they're all dogmatic. They all, like, stick to their talking points. And it's like, well, what if you actually thought about it? Then it would be right-wing, left-wing, think-wing. So the think-wing is the part of the political group, I can't think of a word I want to use, that actually thinks about what their belief systems mean, and that sometimes their belief systems might take them a little to the right, and sometimes their belief systems might take them a little to the left, and they don't have to be dogmatic. They just have to think about what is the best thing based on the facts.
Yeah, you know, see, Pat Paulson once said, I'm middle of the bird.
Middle of the bird. Who said that? Who said that?
Yeah, Pat Paulson, I think. You know, they say, well, some people are right-wing, some are left-wing. I consider myself middle of the bird.
Now, you see, I had never thought of that or heard of that when I came up with that, but I may use it. Middle of the bird. That's me. Okay, well, thank you, Earl, for asking that question so I could discuss why I have this strange show name again.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Earl. Take care.
Okay.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio, and now you know why. With Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, Bob Gartner is on the controls. Remember to support your community-supported, non-commercial, tax-deductible radio station, KPFT. Go to kpft.org. Click on the tip or donate jar, and I really have to look and see what they're calling it now. Donate as much or as little as you can. Your next tax bill, you can take it as a deduction. And, of course, thinkwingradio.com is my website, and at thinkwingradio is where you can find me on Twitter. And we have open lines as well as a couple of people holding. I'm going to get to them in a moment. 713-526-5738. I think if you call at this point in the show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll get on before the end. So if you want to talk on the radio, I can pretty much guarantee you at least a couple of minutes now. All right, next up is Johnny. You're on the air. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. A lot better since Cliff Smith came back to KPFT twice, 2 weeks in a row.
Okay.
Think Wing Radio, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. It's a thinking part of the bird.
There you go.
Where the head is at.
The middle of the bird.
Middle of the brain, yeah, the brain. Although we say use the word bird brain, so maybe that's offensive to birds, but who knows?
Well, actually, birds have increasingly been shown to be much, much smarter than one might think, given their brain-to-body proportions. So
that's
bird
right.
Brain may be
crows,
a complete misconception.
I think crows can identify individual human faces.
I'm sorry?
I think crows are the species that can identify individual human faces.
There are speaking birds like parrots and cockatoos that actually can learn not to mimic, but appear to learn to actually speak what's on their minds using the voices they have learned and taking words they have learned and putting them in a correct order to say something else. It's really, really very interesting stuff.
It's amazing how far humans have come since the Bible was first written. Now we, because of science and scientific thought and experimentation, that we've discovered that we're not really as great as we think we are.
Well,
whose image are we really made in, if at all?
Well, the last thing humans want to have to do is attribute any kind of intelligence or emotion to animals, because then when we kill for food, it makes us murderers.
Oh, yeah, it makes it that much harder. Yep, that's one problem. Why I called,
yep.
Again, I don't know if it's because we're both New Yorkers or great minds think alike, but when you first mentioned at the top of your show about the need for a national water redistribution system,
yes.
I suggested this a number of years ago. I don't recall why I did that. Maybe it was after one of the hurricanes back then. But what I didn't think to add was the fact that we should do it, not allowing corporations to do it, but have encouraged groups of citizens across the country to have their own cooperative businesses so that we eliminate CEOs and that superstructure of profit. In the same way you would for medicinal marijuana or what's another good business model for that, medical marijuana.
Publicly owned utilities. Well,
yeah, utilities.
The
water
thing,
redistribution, I think that's a great idea. I think we should do that. Oh, there's
a great idea. I love it.
To mention. You mentioned the media. I think maybe our plan of attack as far as putting pressure on Trump via social media and going to massive demonstrations all the time. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that, but I think we should also devote a great number of resources towards pressuring NPR back into being the NPR of the 1970s.
Yeah, they can't.
Because they were under attack by Breitbart for such a long time, and now they've got that guy, David Koch or the other Koch, on the head of their board, and I think we need to really work hard on undoing all that.
Well,
because NPR has a big reach.
The problem with NPR and PBS are that the government has pretty much lassoed them down at the insistence and legislation of the right
Republicans.
Yes, of the Republicans. The model that I had in mind for this so-called national flood control system was the interstate highway system, where essentially it would be built publicly, that the national, state, and local governments would kick in. There would be a master plan, and each different government entity would put in their portion until the thing was complete, much like the interstate highway system. So that's kind of the model I envisioned. I did not envision private enterprise involved at all, except insofar as contracting the construction.
Right, but you don't want private enterprise as far as the Republican version. You don't want it to be corporatized because you always have CEOs drawing salary and making things more expensive, like they aim to do with health care come January. So what I'm saying is, since we have massive unemployment still, and there's lots of people who need to have skills and they want to be empowered, the best way to empower people is you set up a government loan system or grant system of monies where people who know each other go into business, cooperative businesses, a string of businesses across the country, where you have delivery systems that might fall short of the pipe, so you have businesses that take over, that deliver the actual water, let's say by truck.
Well,
electric power trucks or diesel or
part of what you're suggesting sounds like it's flirting with socialism. As soon as you start talking about co-ops, the capitalists go crazy.
But what choice do we have?
Well,
what choice do we have? We have to have a massive re-education effort. The majority of Americans are socialists. They just don't know it.
Exactly. I have actually been saying for a while that, you know, they have something called social democrats. We need social capitalists. We need capitalists.
I'll have to think about that.
I have been trying to come up with like a formulation, and the one I've finally settled on after a couple of years of pondering this is the term social capitalists. Capitalists who believe in private enterprise, entrepreneurialism, profit, and also social responsibility. That has to be
that the profit does not go to one individual at the top. It's not vertical, it's horizontal.
Well, one person at the top is okay, but, you know, at one time in Japan, the rule was that no CEO made more than 50 times the least paid person in the company. That at least creates...
Yeah, look what happened to that. Look at where we're at now, 300 times,
yeah.
500 times.
But you see, one of the things about that...
I don't know if it was with you, I had this conversation, was probably somebody else.
Maybe.
But I thought that it was okay. Oh, Tom Hartman is who I told this to. I thought it was okay that if people like physicians who go to medical school and invest a lot of time and money to becoming proficient at their profession, that it would be okay for those kinds of folks to make 50 times the amount of someone who makes middle wage, median age. Let's say the median salary is $50,000. So if you're a doctor, especially if you specialize, it's okay for you to make 30 or 40 or 50 times that amount.
It's just the thing that I've been saying that I think sums it up is that excess executive compensation in an informal sense is not a victimless crime. It comes out of the pockets of workers. It comes out of the pockets of consumers in prices that are unnecessarily high, workers' wages that are unnecessarily low. Excess executive compensation is not a victimless crime in the metaphorical
sense.
Right, and
that's how come you have people with these golden parachutes, and they get them for what? For losing less money? Insane and criminal and unethical is that?
Well, for that matter, we had an HISD, I forget what they call the leader of the HISD, that they fired him, and because it was not the end of his contract, he left with a golden parachute of several million dollars. Same thing happened at Baylor College of Medicine when they fired a president of the Baylor College of Medicine. This is a common thing. When you get to a certain level, it's almost like, please, fire me. Fire me so I can get a lump sum in seven figures. Anyway, I got to let you go, Johnny. Anything you want to wrap up before I let you go?
Nope. Keep up doing what you're doing. You're doing a good job. I wish there were more Republicans like you.
I'm not a Republican.
You said one time that you are the most liberal Republican at KPFT.
No, I said I was the most conservative liberal. There is a world of difference.
The most conservative liberal. I think you're right.
Okay.
I stand corrected.
That I will stand behind. Okay, take it easy,
and
Johnny.
And if I'm liberal, I can say with no problem I stand corrected.
Excellent.
That's another problem.
Liberals are more likely to concede error. Okay.
Right.
Take
you
care.
Have a good night, my friend.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, is it Maud up next? Is that the name? You're on the air?
Hey, Mike. M-O-D.
M-O-D.
A loved one asked me to change my name, so you might figure out who it is before we hang up. But if it's okay, if I can use my new name, that's all right.
That's, you can use whatever name you want. That's the lovely thing about radio. Faceless, nameless.
And being honest, though.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I don't have much to say. I think you guys have a really good conversation going on right now. I was thinking about the water, and also to Johnny's point about unregulated capitalism, maybe. But with water, though, when I first heard you last year or so, you were asking about Fukushima as a topic.
Yes.
Of discussion, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but. That hasn't gone away.
Well, for what it's worth, it's still an ongoing disaster, so it's not like it isn't current events.
It's the world's largest cat's claw. It's probably the worst disaster in the world that we don't know about yet.
Radioactive water is still going into the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima, so that you don't hear about it, but it is ongoing.
Yeah, the West Coast is getting hit right now.
Yep.
Or has been for some time.
Yep.
What else? Okay, then I guess to the capitalism.
Yep.
It's... You know, if you remove, or if you put in what Graham Billy Leach, Senator Phil Graham's bill for deregulation of almost every major industry in this nation is now for profit, and so it's going to be a hard, how do you go about getting the waterways or municipalities working? I'm not sure how y'all. It's a good idea. I mean, clean water is the source of life.
Well, it really comes down to a willingness to involve government in those places where government can do good by uniting purpose. And I think that's kind of what conservatives miss when they talk about getting government out of my life. And every time they go to work, they're using government. And every time they call a fire department or a policeman, they're using government. Every time they get a ticket, they're being oppressed by government. Government is in every part of their lives, and there are things that government does best because it can unite purpose across all of these different interest groups and governmental and private entities. That's what government does best.
So, yeah, government, I think, is needed no matter what because you have anarchy.
Right.
Without it, and if it's kept in, check, with the constituents, the people of a republic or a nation are to have the government serve them. But if they become docile or complacent and don't pay attention, things like what we're witnessing right now with Trump coming in domestically will be as well. I think everyone's already worrying about with all his appointments of corporate, opportunists, they really have no government experience.
You bring up a point that actually at this moment reminds me of something I've been wanting to say. I think that the main media companies, and I mean, let's face it, by most measures, you'd have to call Fox at this point a mainstream media company, whatever they think of themselves, however they position themselves. I am working little by little in my small income way, trying to not only read and visit, but support financially, five bucks here, 10 bucks there, trying to support what I think are effective, factual, alternative news and information organizations. KPFT is one that I occasionally support, partly because I have a show here. I don't know that I want to name others, but there are both for-profit. I will say this. I recently sent a few dollars to The Guardian. The Guardian is not a tax-deductible news organization, but I very much appreciate the kind of reporting that they do. And you can either subscribe or support. Not tax-deductible, but I went ahead and sent them a few dollars anyhow because I appreciate what they do. I've done the same thing for Wikipedia, which for the most part I use heavily as a general source of information, which for the most part is pretty good. Well, maybe I am mentioning some stuff. So Alternet, alternet.org, I think is perhaps worthy of financial support. Daily Cause is worthy of financial support. I don't think you can rely on the mainstream media, not necessarily because they all lie, because organizations like NBC and CBS and ABC and Reuters and AP, they don't lie. I don't believe they lie. But they sometimes will modify how they report in order to retain access. Or, you know, they make editorial choices on what they're going to report. And I think one of the examples that I have remembered for years now is for the first 2 weeks of Occupy Wall Street, the only mainstream news voice that even discussed it was Keith Olbermann. It wasn't on NBC, even though it was just down the street from them. It wasn't on the other networks. It was barely covered in any of the newspaper media. I use the term loosely now these days. For 2 weeks, it was only Keith Olbermann, and then finally it started getting picked up by the other media. And that's why it's important to remember that there are reliable, fact-based, small organizations that do get you information. You just have to ferret them out.
Yeah, and I think that's the concern we're talking about going into this
latest
National Defense Authorization Act, Mike, is that if you have Trump coming in and he only will use Twitter for his press conference, the press can't touch him, right?
Well, they can touch him. They just can't talk directly to him.
Right.
And that's really the point that I'm making,
right,
is these news organizations, they need to start doing investigative reporting. You know, you can't just go to someone and be nice to them so you can retain access, because access is just repeating, parroting what your interviewee is saying.
Right.
Reporting is when you actually have to work and get information from sources other than your interviewee, because your interviewee may be lying or shading the truth.
Right, and I think that's what we're going to witness. Is the concern coming up is, if our government is going to spend $160 on anti-propaganda initiatives and using social media networks and known news outlets, openly they're saying that. I think they've been doing it for the last 50 years, actually. But legally, then these outlets you're talking about, and we all have some that we all go to because we like to get, you know, information from not the mainstream.
Varied sources.
Yeah,
and varied is important. I'm not saying not to pay attention to reliable mainstream media, but to leaven that with some other reliable media that may not be considered mainstream.
Okay, so I'll leave you with this then. So I think that was a topic I guess we can lean into, is that if Trump comes in and he has all these, you know, liberties already taken care of, issues like, you know, limited information, or for, you know, the government to deem what is, you know, good information, when we've been getting propaganda for the last 50 years, do you think he's going to change that? Do you think he's going to come in and say, I want, you know, the First Amendment, I want indefinite detention removed from the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, I mean, habeas corpus reinstalled? Do you think he's going to be that kind of person?
I
don't think he will.
I don't think Trump even knows or cares about that stuff. Trump is going to be now there are Republicans that are going to try to manipulate him different ways. But as far as Trump is concerned, I think he only cares about what benefits Trump.
Well, he will be no longer the angel of death that Obama's been in the last 8 years in the Middle East, killing so many Muslims, because he is one, supposedly, right? But
I think that the jury is out on which people he'll be killing. But we'll see.
What I mean, Mike, is that Trump will take down the Middle East, and he'll be like the Putin, the Messiah, right? You know, he won't be starting, you know, he'll defund Yemen, you know, and Saudi's, you know, incineration of all those people down there. Just maybe the wars in the Middle East will start lessening, but at home, it's opportunity for him, right?
I am betting that the first part of what you say is wrong, and the second part of what you say is right. I think the jury is out, but we'll know in about 10 weeks, won't we?
It's going to be interesting.
All right. Let me let you just wrap up, and then I'm going to move on. So if you want to take a minute, I can give you that.
Yeah. To Johnny's point on, you know, unregulated capitalism, East Timor you know, east, southeast of Indonesia during the Carter administration, about 76, was inoculated. The NATO went in there and just murdered like 3 million people. That civilization was not fiat-based. It didn't have an international monetary loan, but they had what was called universal labor. And the a businessman or a shoemaker or a dentist, they all had the same pay. And I'm not gonna, but look up for yourself, East Timor, as far as the, by Indonesia.
Well, I'm a firm believer in universal national service, whether it's military or civil. So we're not necessarily far apart on that. I'm suspecting we could negotiate it. Anyway,
Mike, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you for calling. You take care.
Bye.
All right. We do have open lines. I can't promise you'll get on the air, but some of you may. 713-526-5738. We have about 6 minutes left, so it's possible one or two more callers could get on, including Max, who is going to go on the air right now. Max, thank you for calling. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening. Doing fine. I think I spoke to you while you might have been substituting in another show.
I recently was doing Jeff Berg's show.
I'm the guy who complained about the Taft-Hartley Act causing a legal rift between labor and management.
No, that wasn't me.
And I need to correct myself.
Okay.
Do you recall that?
No, I don't think it was me, but go ahead.
Taft-Hartley is an antitrust act, and I think the act I should have referenced is probably called the National Labor Relations Act.
Okay.
It sets up the National Labor Relations Board.
Okay.
And it is that entity that kind of legally sets up a conflict, an animosity between labor and management.
Oh, I don't think you needed anything to create that animosity. It just created a labor entity for capital to have an animosity toward, as
right.
opposed to, you know, simply dominating labor individually, person by person.
True, but it can work the other way when labor organizations get undue power.
I agree.
They can be pretty obstinate and anti-good social progress as well. I think the real key is that labor needs to wake up, smell the coffee, and learn how to own and manage companies.
I will tell you, you know, there's been some discussion over the last several months about the nuclear triad, that Trump did not know what that was. I have actually formulated the notion of the socio-political triad, which is business, labor, government. You've got these three legs on the stool that when they're perfectly balanced and the chair and the stool isn't rocking back and forth because it's so uneven, that dynamic tension is kind of what keeps things healthy. When any one of those legs gets too powerful, it pops the whole stool off balance. So
right.
You need labor to be powerful enough. You need capital to be powerful enough. And you need government to be powerful enough. And the dynamic tension has to be just right. I think there's no question that big labor can destroy businesses. But I think there's no question that businesses can destroy workers. And I think government, as having the overarching unifying plans, as opposed to everybody's little plans, I think government also plays a role. We need more unionization. We need stronger unions. But we also need, when they get powerful, there's a place where they need to start taking some responsibility for the damage they do to companies.
Right. I have a candidate for a social capitalist.
Okay, who?
How about Berkshire Hathaway?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All right, I'm going to tell you that I am going to give you about 30 to 60 seconds to wrap up, and then I'm going to have to start closing down the show for tonight.
Okay. A new topic, a short one.
30 seconds.
If Houston could come to an agreement on what its next role in space exploration should be, and if that were to be sustaining human life, animal life, plant life in space in a shirt sleeve environment like we are on spaceship Earth. Think what that would do to the way we live on Earth if we accomplished that.
I have been pro space exploration since I was a little kid, and while I would love to go to Mars in my lifetime, I think the place to go first is the moon, where we can learn everything we need to go to Mars. Okay, I gotta let you go. Have a great week. Thanks for calling, Max. I appreciate it. Let me just say that if you go to my website for nothing else, go to it so you can link to this article by William J. Barber, Reverend Barber. It's a great piece. It's an important thought piece. Go to my site, link to it, and go to the full article. I've just got a few excerpts there. ThinkWingRadio.com. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to the callers. Today's quote, I was looking for something apropos, and it came from Star Trek. Dr. McCoy in the episode Omega Glory. Spock, I've found that evil usually triumphs unless good is very, very careful. All right. Think about that. Have a great week. And my God, I'm wrapping up 50 seconds early. Bob, do I get an attaboy for that? Yeah, stretch. Stretch. Let's see. Stretching. Oh, well, the GOP is claiming a mandate and they want to repeal everything Obama did. Trump's vow to undo Obama rules, not so fast. Those are another couple of articles that you can go to on my site, thinkwingradio.com. Remember to support KPFT at kpft.org. Juan Flores is coming on with Jazz Latino. Stay, hang around, listen. Lovely ambiance. The music is very mellow and really quite lovely. And now I've got 8 seconds. Have a great week. I'll speak to you next Monday. Take care.
The Rothko Chapel will honor Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and legacy on January 15th from 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. in a major event featuring keynote speaker Leonard Pitts Jr. The chapel will also hold a ceremony to welcome the return of the Broken Obelisk, the famous Barnett Newman sculpture. There will also be appearances by public officials, including Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. The evening will conclude with The Fierce Urgency of Now by award-winning writer Leonard Pitts Jr. The reception will include performances by young poets from Writers in the Schools. Jackson Neal, a member of the 2016 Metaphor Houston Youth Poetry Slam Team, and Farina Arafin, the City of Houston's second Youth Poet Laureate. RothkoChapel.org. KPFT Houston.
For those who helped KPFT with the year-end gift, thank you for wrapping 2016 on a high note. The outcome of the presidential election shocked some and pleased others. As the new administration enters office, all of us will need each other to forge ahead. You hear that sense of community in KPFT, music that provides you with strength, and voices that shine the light into our lives. As our nation enters a new political era, it's more vital than ever that we work together. KPFT turns to you to lift up its upcoming winter drive with a pre-pledge. Support Real Radio when you need it most at kpft.org. Thanks. This is KPFT, Houston.